Good morning. It is February 2nd, 2014. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. We have a Super Bowl-esque program this morning. Christina talks to three different kinds of coaches about their work, and I go Super Bowling, finding out more about the growing Arkansas high school sport of bowling.
But first, Timothy Dennis has the latest headlines in this week's Week in Review.
Tax season has officially begun. Some Arkansas residents who have already filed their taxes have received tax refunds from the state, while the Internal Revenue Service began processing returns on Friday. The agency advises those filing a tax return to find out about possible new deductions, how to determine filing status, and what tax credits are available. Lee Kreuzberg is a spokeswoman for the IRS. She encourages Arkansans to file electronically with a service known as e-file. She also says taxpayers will be able to monitor the status of their refunds online.
We're expecting 1.3 million tax returns to be filed in Arkansas this year. And certainly, you know, we encourage people to e-file, and if they have a refund coming to them, opt for direct deposit. We expect to issue more than 90% of refunds in fewer than 21 days this year.
She encourages Arkansas residents who make less than $58,000 annually to visit the IRS website to look into how they can file taxes for free, but also warns people of potential email scams. And speaking of getting money, the Jones Center in Springdale is looking to the city to help with certain improvements to the center's outdoor amenities. Officials with the Jones Center want to build a canopy structure over the center's outdoor basketball courts, a move necessitated by increased demand for the indoor courts by community-organized leagues, leaving those wanting to have a pickup game waiting. But if the improvements are carried out, the usable period for the outdoor courts would extend from 6 to 9 months of the year, and wet weather wouldn't prevent the basketball courts from being used. Ed Clifford, Chief Executive Officer of the Jones Center, says that's why the center has asked the city to join in a public-private partnership on the improvement project.
That may or may not be possible. It's an interesting question whether or not a city can spend dollars, public dollars, and locate those dollars on a private property and private facility. We think since it's a community park, it's really not a private facility. We maintain it, but the public uses that whole community park to the west of Jones Center. So we think it makes some sense for East Springdale to be able to expand the recreation opportunity. But it's an interesting legal question. I know the Springdale City Attorney is looking at it, and some of the city councils are looking at it. So for us, it's beginning a dialogue about how we can better serve all of Springdale.
The project could include other recreational facilities, such as converting the old ropes course into 4 soccer fields. But before any of that can happen, the Jones Center needs roughly $475,000 to complete the project. And the discussion over money allocation has been a constant topic of consternation in the discussion in Washington regarding the Farm Bill. Wednesday, the bill passed in the House after years of setbacks, with conservatives wanting to overhaul the $80 billion a year program, while liberals felt a 1% reduction to the food stamp program was too deep. Arkansas Senator John Bozeman was part of a conference committee that worked on a final deal.
We spent a couple of years trying to get a good compromise, and I think that the product that we came up with will represent all of the regions of agriculture and really put a good safety net under the various regions, the various producers that have different needs so that they can go to the bank very soon, make planning decisions, and then carry on.
Senator Bozeman says he hopes the Senate votes on the bill quickly, saying it will be very beneficial to the state.
In Arkansas, this is 18-19% of our economy. And for most states, that's the same story. So I think a lot of members are anxious to get this behind us so that our farmers, ranchers, producers can go forward with some certainty. And this is something that will create jobs and boost the economy.
Democratic Senator Mark Pryor is also supporting the compromise, saying it will help Arkansas's agriculture industry, which accounts for 1 in 6 jobs in the state. Final passage is expected, and President Obama has said he will sign the bill. From the Harold and Blanche Calk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
In this month's Three People series, we visit with coaches, three different coaches. Coach Vance Arnold is the baseball coach at Fayetteville High School. Robert Paliza is the volleyball coach at the University of Arkansas. And Ashley Ofinger is the dance director and coach of Fayetteville Youth Dance Company. Well, I'd like to start by just, how did you decide that you wanted to become a coach? Is it something that you knew when you were perhaps playing baseball yourself in junior high and high school? Or, you know, when you were playing volleyball and dancing? Or did it just kind of seem like the next step? Coach Arnold?
Well, I think it started for me when the seventh grade band director asked me if I was going to play football. Get out of the performing arts. But I've always enjoyed outdoor activities, competition. I admired many of the coaches I had when I was in youth league and stuff like that, and I wanted to be kind of a model and a mentor to young people.
For me, it happened when I was junior and senior in high school, and I was asked to coach a fifth and sixth grade team, and that was kind of the first time I kind of started kind of coaching a little bit, and it was just for a couple of tournaments. And I just kind of fell in love with it. And then from there, I kind of started coaching club. And then when I came to the United States, actually, as a college player, I got asked to coach high school. And that was kind of it. At that point, I kind of knew that was going to be my career, and I fell in love with it, and now here I am.
So leadership's kind of always been a thing for you.
Yeah, I think it has. You know, my position since I was young was to be a setter, which is a leadership position. It's kind of like the quarterback in football. And I was doing that since I was in fifth, sixth grade. So that part kind of put me in a leadership position early on in my life. You know, I never felt uncomfortable with that. And I think that's part of it.
Ashley, when did you know that you wanted to teach and direct and coach?
It took me a little bit longer. I started dancing when I was 3, and then I was on a competitive team from 8 to 18. And then from about 18 to 20, I took a little break from dance. I was still taking class, but I never thought, I kind of gave up the dream of being a professional dancer. And so I was going to school for psychology. And when I was about 20, I got asked to choreograph some solos for my old dance team back in Texas. And I fell in love with choreography and the artistry of choreographing dances. And so then I looked for a studio here, and that's when I met Hannah Pasquinzo at the Art of Motion, and I started teaching for her, and I just fell in love with it. And I finished my degree in psychology, but I knew that, you know, my heart was in teaching, and so I've been teaching ever since.
Your job's a little bit different than Coach Paliza and Coach Arnold. I mean, there's a clear offense and defense, you know, with volleyball and with baseball. I mean, it's a little bit different than football, but, you know, there is. Mm-hmm. So what is it that you tell your students and your dancers?
Sure. So I'm, you know, it depends on the age, but I'm really big about creating an artist and an athlete. I think that that's really important in dance. And I think, you know, we strive for great technique and we strive for, you know, to create excellent dancers, but we also strive to create excellent people and build character in these young women. I think it's really important to inspire them to do whatever they want to do with their lives and to be the leaders of their generation, you know. And so it is difficult because it is an art and a sport at the same time, you know, and that balance is sometimes difficult as a teacher to know which to focus on at the right time.
What sort of tools do you use to motivate and inspire? What are your methods, Coach Arnold?
I talk to our athletes quite a bit. I try to give them life situations, trouble in school, attitudes, you know, tell them things that I was guilty of when I was a student or an athlete, you know, that I wasn't as responsible as I needed to be, or, you know, other coaches. Positive compliments, but let them realize, too, when they've got a bad attitude or they're being arrogant or egotistical. Those kind of things push other people away from athletes. So, you know, we try to be humble and be aware of how we're perceived in the community.
Well, you're coming off the baseball team. You were state championships.
Yes, ma'am.
Last year. Mm-hmm. So did you see a lot of, were they cocky this year, your players? And how did you ensure that they didn't walk around with a big head?
Well, we've been really blessed. We've got a great legacy at Fayetteville High School. We've got a lot of following among the community because of players who have won and played. We've won 6 state championships since 2002, and we've played in it 7 times. So the kids kind of expect it. They've attended. Some of our current players have attended former championship games, and they've seen the way our kids act, and they know what's expected of them, and role models, and we as coaches try to instill in them is, you know, anything can happen at any time, so you've just got to accept what happens and move forward.
Well, Coach Palizza, you're coming off of a pretty good season as well. How do you ensure that your players
stay
humble?
Stay humble.
Yeah.
Oh, for us, it's just about understanding that what we did, you know, was good and exciting, and that we feel good about it. But at the same time, understanding that that's finished, you know, that's the past. So we try to get into forward movement, you know, almost right away after the season's over.
Well, Ashley, I'm sort of picturing, you know, you primarily work with females, mm-hmm. and probably junior high school aged. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of picturing mean girls. A little bit, you know, I just am. So how do you make sure that doesn't happen?
Sure.
With a group of girls?
Good question. You know, there are always those bad apples every once in a while, and we've dealt with some of that. You know, it takes great communication with the parents, I think, and a common goal with the parents to, you know, really instill values in these girls. Especially with Fayetteville Youth Dance Company, I think we have a family mentality. You know, we make everything about the team more than the individual, and the team always comes first, and I think that is really important. I also started doing something this year. I had them write themselves a letter about what kind of teammate and friend and student they wanted to be this year and what that meant to them, and I told them, I said, you know, if we ever get any attitude problems or whatever, I'm not going to yell at you. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to say, you know, remember that letter. And what do you want to be? Who do you want to be? And it's worked really well. And I think it's kept them really motivated and focused on, you know, the type of person they want to bring to the table. Mm-hmm. So
when the going gets rough, when the going gets tough, when your season's not going so well, how do you ensure that your players stay positive?
I think that's always the toughest part of our job. It's always easy to be happy when you're winning. It's easy to manage when you're winning. It gets tough when things are not going well. How do you keep them positive, but still at the same time, how you hold them accountable and push them? And I think that's a fine line. That's really for coaches. I think that the toughest part of just being successful and manage those type of moments. You know, and every team is different. Every person's different. And you just try to hit the right buttons at the right time. I, you know, when it all gets down to it, it's just knowing your individuals, having built relationships, and try to just keep yourself from a coaching standpoint calm enough to be able to just converse with them to see what they need and what tools you can help them with to be successful. So that's one thing I challenge myself all the time is just to be patient and to just get to know your athletes and just really just give them the tools at those moments so that they can pull from within and find that mm-hmm. confidence and move forward.
Well, Ashley, I feel like I'm kind of talking about how your job is much different from these other two coaches, but it is. Mm-hmm. And so Coach Arnold and Coach Palizza can coach from the sidelines as their mm-hmm. players are playing. But you're probably maybe watching from backstage. There's music going.
Right.
How do you motivate from the sidelines?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I learned after my first year to, no matter what happens that weekend, no matter if it's their worst performance ever, it's really important to keep everything positive that day because they have 5 to 10 numbers that are competing in the same day. And if they mess up the first one and, you know, they get called on it and there's some negative energy, then they might mess up the next one. And so I've learned to just keep it all really happy and positive and wait until we get back into the studio to give constructive criticism. Competitions, sometimes, you know, you have an hour between your dances. Sometimes you have 3 numbers. It just kind of depends on the competition, the schedule. And so we try to keep their energy up, but we also try to keep them focused. You know, backstage, I don't let them watch the other dances right before them because I want them to stay focused. Like, we sit in a little circle. You know, depending on the dance, we'll usually go around and talk about what the dance is about and what it means to them and what they're going, you know, what kind of emotions they're going to think about and what story they can tell through their dance, and just keep them focused and motivated. And then I usually leave them the number before and I go out to the audience, because I feel like they're old enough to kind of take some deep breaths and prepare themselves, and I think that gives them a little bit of independence.
Going along the lines of differences, Ashley works with females, and you're a male coach working with males. Mm-hmm. You're a male coach working with female players at the university. Is that a challenge, and how do you overcome it if it is?
I don't think it's a challenge. Yeah. I've actually never felt it's a challenge. I really enjoyed it. Since I kind of really started my coaching career, I've been coaching females, so that part have been second nature. I was very lucky, you know, to have a great mom. As a role model, you know, and as a strong female, and she pretty much raised me on her own and raised my brother and my sister. So I know the strength of females and how driven they are to do great things and how much they care about others. So, you know, I guess I was lucky early on to have that influence in my life, and you know, coaching females is empowering, is exciting, and they're very, very, very caring. You know, there's always, you know, I always think that the misconception that girls are girls, but our players are really, really tough females. I mean, they're tough, they're powerful, they're confident, and just seeing that in them and how driven they are to be great, it's a very powerful thing. And for me, it's not a challenge. For me, I love it.
Well, just one last question. What is the one thing that you would like me and our listeners to know about your sport, your team?
About our sport, I think it's really important. Like I said earlier, dance is, I consider it a sport and an art. And I think it's a tough balance to keep, but also an amazing balance to pursue. And I love that. And I love bringing that into young girls' lives, the athleticism and the artistry. And I think that I'm really passionate about that. You know, I care more about my kiddos' hearts and their futures as people than as dancers. And I think that's my main focus. You know, a couple of them may be professional dancers, and I want to give them the opportunities to be able to do that. But more importantly, I want to send them out in the world to make a difference and to be the leaders of their generation.
One of the reasons I'm biased about the game of volleyball is the game of volleyball is really a true team sport. And in the sport of volleyball, you're only as good as the person next to you, okay? Because you can control the ball. It's a rebound sport. So if I'm a great attacker, I can only attack the ball, all right, if the passer passed the ball to the setter. I can only attack the ball if the setter set me the ball and set me a good set. And that's the only time I can really be successful at attacking the ball. And therefore, it immediately becomes a team sport because of those kind of circumstances. But the only way the team can move forward is if that attacker scores on that ball. And it's just really, truly an extension of each other. And I love that concept of team sport. That's why I'm drawn to volleyball so much. You're only as good as the person next to you. And again, it goes back to giving. You know, if you want to be great, you got to make sure the person next to you is great. And what are you going to do to help that person be great, and vice versa?
Well, you know, I think to echo the same thing that, you know, that we're all in team sports, or we're encouraging, you know, to be successful. You know, there's examples. You see things, and I think when you actually play and are on a team that you depend on the other person and you make memories and things. Last year in the state tournament, we had absolutely fantastic pitching. And I think some of the kids thought, oh, we're going to walk through the tournament stuff. You know, we won't be challenged. Well, you know, we were challenged in three different games and with our best pitchers on the mound and the names and the hype and stuff. And our third baseman, who's probably the best third baseman I've ever coached, made five plays in the state tournament that allowed us takes pressure off the pitcher and the rest of the team so they could do their job and be successful. And if we didn't have that third baseman or didn't have another player, if we played without one, then the team itself wouldn't be successful. Not one person can overcome another person's contributions. So I think to the youth in Fayetteville and the community in the area that team sports depend on more than one person.
Joining me for our Three People series were Coach Vance Arnold, baseball coach at Fayetteville High School, Coach Robert Paliza, volleyball coach at the University of Arkansas, and Ashley Ofinger, director of the Fayetteville Youth Dance Company and Art of Motion. This is Ozarks at Large.
Every school year, thousands of Arkansans go to fields, courts, tracks, and gyms to watch local teams compete. High school football, basketball, and some baseball teams are regularly on radio and receive inches of coverage in newspapers and online. Other sports don't receive as much attention, and some are still relatively new programs. Wrestling has only been an Arkansas high school sport for a few years. Bowling, too, has been added in the past few. The first Arkansas high school bowling season for girls was 2004-2005. The seasons for boys didn't come for a few more years. For this academic year, nearly 75 school districts are fielding teams, from some of the biggest, like Springdale and Bentonville, to some of the schools with the smallest enrollments, like Norfolk and Haas Hall Academy in Fayetteville. This week, Clarksville hosted its first home match of the season against BB, and the Clarksville Panthers coach, John Sandlin, set his lineups as the bowlers warmed up.
Girls, Haley Falcons, Kara and Holly will be together. Then Miranda Thomas, Savannah, and Haley Vasquez will be together. Right.
More than two dozen students were at the Sherwood Bowl in Clarksville Tuesday afternoon. Coach Sandlin says bowling is a democratic game. The kid's not big enough or fast enough or quick enough or simply not interested in some of the other higher profile sports can excel at the lanes.
Oh, yes. And we've got some kids. One of my boys sitting here today, he's an all-conference football player, great big lineman. And we've got kids that this is the only thing that they do, that they are bowlers. They come and they're in the youth bowl program. They've been bowling since they were 5 years old. And they're, like you said, those are kids that couldn't play football if they wanted to or run track or anything like that. But this does give them a chance to come out and compete and have a good time.
The Arkansas Activities Association, the organization governing high school sports, uses the rules and guidelines established by the United States Bowling Congress. Teams of six boys and six girls compete, and the season will conclude next month with conference and state tournaments. John Sandlin, the Clarksville coach, is also part of that school's football coaching staff. He says while he can scout film of other football teams, bowling is all about getting better yourself.
It's a lot like track. You're a lot about beating yourself, beating your own score. You're coming out, you know what your average is, you know what your high score is, and you're coming out and trying to compete the best that you can. And it adds something that you are competing against somebody else, but you're really more worried about yourself and how you do. More of an individualized sport.
While high school bowling has been in Arkansas for less than a decade, youth bowling has a long history in the state. Catherine Johnson Tilley, the co-owner of the Sherwood Bowl in Clarksville, is a retired teacher and says she's been working with young bowlers for quite a while. And she's glad the sport has finally been recognized by the Arkansas Activities Association.
Well, I like the people. I like the interaction, the social situation with the people. And we have some very good people that bowl. I have really never met a bad person that's bowling. So, and these young people, we have a Saturday Youth League. And sometimes I recruit some of these bowlers. Sometimes I kind of encourage them to get in there because it gives them extra practice. We have Ozark, like I said, in Clarksville, and Lamar is joining us this year. So we're starting with Lamar, too.
Lamar, 9 miles from Clarksville, is using these lanes as their home for their first season of bowling this year. Both of the teams at the alley on this day, Clarksville and Beebe, are 5A schools. Not among the largest districts in the state, but certainly not among the smallest either. Each year, more small schools are adding bowling, a sport that, transportation to away games excluded, can increase the opportunity for more students to be part of a team with limited expense. Shoes and bowling balls, after all, can be found at any alley. Andy O'Mara, the coach for the BB Badgers, is in his third season in that position. He says the program began at BB 7 years ago, and some years as many as 30 boys or girls will try out for the team, many of them seeking a chance to be part of a team.
That's what I had. The kind of kids that we have at BB are the kids that don't do the other sports. I think it's probably because they're needed or they want to. The kids that are in the other sports, they work year round, you know. But we get those kids that just don't do hardly anything, and they enjoy it. They have fun with it.
Daryl Johnson, who co-owns the Sherwood Bowl in Clarksville, says he fell in love with bowling when he was just 8. By 16, he was bowling in top team USA youth tournaments around the country, and he's rolled 8 perfect games. But he's too old to have been able to participate on a high school team.
When I was in high school, I wish they'd have had this. They started this, I was probably out. We started this about 8 years ago. Yeah, I've been out for a while, so about 10 years. But I wish they would have had this when I was in high school. But I think it's good, though. I mean, it's a good team event, really. I mean, it's not focused on one certain person, so.
John Sandlin, the coach for the Clarksville Panthers, says interest continues to grow at his school, though he does say there has been one challenge.
The biggest struggle that I see at our program and programs that we go against are the girls. We really struggle to have enough girls to come out and bowl. And the girls, we've got 4 or 5 girls on the team that this is their first time to bowl. But they come out and they have a really good time. And they get a lot better as the season goes on.
And BB coach Andy O'Mara points out that really great time could help defray college costs.
You can get to college on this now.
Right.
Arkansas State, number one team in the nation.
The Arkansas State Red Wolves are, in fact, currently on top of the NCAA polls. More than 60 NCAA colleges and universities, including Vanderbilt and Tulane, now offer women's bowling, and most of them have scholarships available. Scholarship earned or not, many of the Arkansas high school bowlers will have something they can carry with them long after graduation. They're cool bowling shirts. Both Clarksville and BB have opted for the traditional, somewhat retro look of classic bowling apparel. Again, BB bowling coach Andy O'Mara.
Kids like them, you know, and they pay for them. It's theirs, so they get to keep them when they're done. But some groups, I don't know if you've noticed, these are true bowling shirts. You don't have to tuck them in, and that's what the kids like. Some groups have polo shirts, and those have to be by rule, they have to be tucked in. So the kids that I have, you know, they don't really like that, so we stick with these, and they like them.
Most bowling matches begin shortly after school's out, around 4, so the spectators are few. The first 2 games of each match are much like league games, sets of bowlers each rolling 10 frames, and the total scores for each team added up. Unlike leagues, there are no handicaps. Total pins are actual total pins. There are also what are called Baker games, when bowling does become more of a traditional team sport. In those games, one bowler rolls the first frame, then a teammate bowls the next frame, and a third bowler rolls after that.
That's real team bowling, and that's fun to watch. It's exciting because everybody builds on the previous person's ball, on the previous person's frame, and it builds and builds. And you know, when one guy does good, it encourages the other one to do well and just keep on going.
The day after this matchup, Clarksville would be back in the Sherwood Bowl to meet Ozark, a school just up Interstate 40. And another school that calls these lanes their home turf. For Catherine Johnson-Tilley, co-owner of the lanes, there will be no cheering for either team.
I said, I'm not on the side, so I'm a bowler, you know, and you're a bowler, and so that's the way it goes. And anyone, it is a sport that anyone can participate in. Little, big, middle-sized, medium, huge, small, whatever.
Clarksville, BB, and Ozark will all hope to be in Fort Smith next month. The 4A, 5A state championships will be held at Bowling World there on February 20th. This is Ozarks at Large.
It's been increasingly more common to find local bars hosting launch parties for new craft beers. Just a few days ago, Sideways hosted a release party for the MILF Imperial Stout from Mother's Brewing. This week, another beer company will enter the Arkansas market. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
In just a few short years, Northwest Arkansas has become home to a number of local brewing companies. There's Ozark Beer Company in Rogers, Saddleback Brewery and Core Brewing in Springdale, and Fossil Cove Brewing Company in Fayetteville, among others. The craft beer scene has continued to grow thanks to companies from outside of the region beginning to distribute their products in our area. Last August, for example, Springfield-based Mother's Brewing Company introduced its beers to the region. Beginning in February, another brewer called Summit Brewing Company will expand into the Arkansas beer market. Bruce Studley is the Western Region Manager for the brewing company, which operates out of St. Paul, Minnesota.
We are truly looking forward to being, you know, part of the Arkansas beer culture that seems to be really evolving right now with recent changes in the law and various counties, you know, changing their perception of bringing alcohol into the county in a friendly way. We're really looking forward to just being part of that culture.
Summit Brewing Company was founded in 1986 and is named for a historic road in St. Paul. With the introduction of its beer into Arkansas, Summit Beer will now be available in 18 states. When deciding where to expand, Studley says they look at markets who approach them and invite them to come take a look. For the past few years, he says consumers have written to the company about coming to Arkansas, and more recently, Summit was approached by distributors at some trade shows.
That's kind of the first step is where would somebody be interested in Summit Brewing Company? And then looking at the beer culture itself and seeing if we could find a place that Summit Brewing Company could fit into that beer culture and become part of the craft beer scene that's going across America right now.
Summit Brewing was founded by a man named Mark Stutrud, who decided to forego getting his master's in social work to start a brewery. Studley explains while Stutrud was working as a social worker at a local hospital, he was dabbling with home brewing. He says a lot of folks had started doing this since home brewing had become legal during former President Jimmy Carter's administration. It was during this time that Stutrud learned of people on the West Coast creating beers that were around before Prohibition. Summit's Western Region Manager Bruce Studley says many people who moved to America in the 1700s and 1800s had brought the skill with them to create various types of beers that disappeared during Prohibition and really didn't emerge again until the 1980s. Stutrud became interested in this and had a vision to bring these styles of beer to Minnesotans.
And so he visited with some of these guys on the West Coast who were brewing in the early 80s and got some ideas from them. He went to school to learn how to brew at Siebel in Chicago, got a degree from there, and then just traveled about looking at different breweries and how to put that together. And so he renovated an old truck parts warehouse in St. Paul in 1986, and the first keg of Summit Extra Pale Ale rolled off the line in September of that year. And since then, we really attribute our success to people who find our beer and taste it and really enjoy that and tell their friends, and they tell their friends, and we have other brewers who stop by who are starting businesses and talk to Mark how he got going, just in the same manner as he did back in 1984 and 1985 on the West Coast.
Today, Summit produces 13 varieties of premium craft beer, including 7 year-round and 5 seasonal beers. Beginning in February, the brewery's flagship beer, Extra Pale Ale, along with Saga IPA, Oatmeal Stout, and Horizon Red IPA, will be available on draft in Arkansas. Studley says Arkansans will have 45 to 60 days to find their favorite style of Summit beer on tap before bottles will be introduced into the market. He expects this to happen closer to spring, and the launch will also include their summer ale. As early as May, Arkansas will also be involved in the launch of a select number of Summit brands that will be distributed in cans. Studley says, pardon the pun, but cans have long been an untapped resource for the 28-year-old brewing company.
If we would go back, you know, 2 decades, cans were still kind of considered an inferior part of the specialty beer business. People who were producing anything other than American lagers, people considered that cans gave their beer maybe an occasional off-profile taste. But the aluminum industry and the packaging of that aluminum, which putting the beer into it and sealing it quick enough, has really come a long way in the past couple decades. And now it's actually turned into one of the better ways to enjoy your beer, under many circumstances. because of the technology that's gone into aluminum and putting beer into cans.
Summit will enter the Arkansas market with the Arkansas Craft Alliance, which is made up of four core distributors: Arkansas Craft Distributors, White River Beverage Company, Three Rivers Distributing, and Three Lakes Distributing. Studley says in addition to Northwest Arkansas, there are craft beer scenes emerging in other parts of the state, including Little Rock, Hot Springs, and Pine Bluff. He says when new breweries start popping up in an area, it creates a real curiosity about craft beer.
So when a few people start doing that, I think that beer drinkers kind of unite together and want to talk more about beer and compare beers from around the countryside and city to city, state to state, and even United States to Europe. They just would get a real enjoyment out of comparing different beers from different producers.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Farrell's will host a Summit Release Super Bowl party tonight. Summit will have launch events in Fayetteville throughout the week, at Tanglewood Branch Beer Company Monday, at Sideways Tuesday, and at Brewski's Wednesday. For details, visit facebook.com/NWA Craft Beer.
Today, millions will watch the Super Bowl. Many will be watching together at a party. I wondered if the days after the game meant a longer work week for the men and women in charge of recycling programs in the region. I asked Brian Pugh, the waste reduction coordinator for the city of Fayetteville, if there's an official increase in recyclable materials picked up the week after the Super Bowl.
We know how much we pick up each week, but it's a cumulative total with all of our materials. When we weigh our trucks, we don't have it separated by commodity type, material type. So as a truck comes in, we'll weigh it. We could tell if there's a difference in weight, but particularly when we do this week to week, we're going to have some weeks that are higher and some weeks that aren't. So it's just kind of the nature of how it goes in our community here. But I can't say definitively, no, that I know I can tell you exactly how much we get for after Razorback games or see any significant increase after that.
And holidays, can you tell anything about that either?
Yes, holidays we can tell, because at Christmas time we actually have to run an extra rear load truck for cardboard, because the cardboard fills up so fast on our recycling trucks that we have to run this around and dump the cardboard into this rear load to keep our guys out on the routes longer. We have a tremendous amount of cardboard increase at Christmas time.
Isn't that a sign of a successful recycling program, though?
Yes, and I'd also say it's a sign of good economic times, when people can go out and purchase items to replace old items or new items, and have these boxes. A lot of the cardboard that we recycle that goes down to Morrilton or goes down to Mansfield, Louisiana, to International Paper, they make cardboard boxes. And when these mills are cranking out boxes, the demand is high for our cardboard. So when there's a lot of orders from stores for cardboard boxes, we can really move our material a whole lot faster because of that demand.
Now, I know that the amount of recycling picked up in a business district like Dixon Street has increased. Do you see any changes with that during or after a big weekend?
Yes. Razorback football games, we have seen a significant increase in glass containers that we pick up in the entertainment district. So that, for sure, we can definitely tell when there's a big game in town. A lot of people coming in, utilizing the entertainment district, and that reflects on the amount of glass we collect.
Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue?
That, we didn't really see a whole lot of a spike on that, mainly because we didn't handle the trash for that event. And a lot of times, our containers, we have to pick up and move and get out of there because of just the sheer number of people that are going to be utilizing that area, that we can't even get into service containers. And if we left them there, they'd probably get trashed up.
Right.
So we take precautions in moving some of those when we need to on events like Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue.
Often people have questions, can I recycle this? Can I recycle that? Where? And you now have a website with a pretty self-explanatory title, don't you?
Yes, we do. In October, we opened up the Marion Orton Recycling Drop-Off Facility off of North Street. At that time, we had a kickoff of our marketing campaign called Recycle Something. And the goal behind Recycle Something is to get people into a habit of recycling. And we want them to be big, start small, and just start with something, whether that's a cardboard box or a plastic bottle or aluminum can. Find a recycling container and place that in there instead of throwing it away. Get into the habit of recycling. And that's what Recycle Something is all about. We've developed commercials that are showing at the movie theater and on Cox Media. And we've also developed this website, which, and if you go to accessfayetteville.org, which is the city's website, we have all of our information about our services for solid waste and recycling listed up there. But it's a lot of information, and people don't like to read through all of that. So with this new site, recyclesomething.org, we have taken the site and condensed down to just recycling information only. And so you can go on there if you're in an apartment complex or if you're a resident of a single-family home, if you're a commercial business. You can go onto that site and find out how you can recycle with our programs.
And it's not just things that are curbside recycling either.
That's true. That's true. We do have information on there on commercial recycling and apartment recycling, which are really big initiatives for the council and the mayor. This coming year, we're really going to strive to make some dents in getting higher diversion levels off of those waste streams.
Brian, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Kyle.
All right. Have a good night. Brian Pugh is the Waste Reduction Coordinator for the City of Fayetteville.
And as we've been discussing today, it is Super Bowl Sunday. And keeping with that theme of Super Bowl, we have our Sunday morning montage.
Last week, we did a montage related to Denver and Colorado.
Right.
In honor of the Broncos. Equal time now.
Mm-hmm. Today, it's Seattle.
And Washington.
Oh. I think I missed him.
Yeah, weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
Love to. How about global thermonuclear war? You know, this is, excuse me, a damn fine cup of coffee.
The other night, dear, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed I held you in my arms. When I awoke, dear, I was mistaken, and I hung my head and cried.
Looks like a car with a balloon tied to it.
Precisely. I will tie a red balloon to the antenna of Bulldog's car every time his precious Seahawks lose a game.
Tell him about the radio show. Go ahead.
Dad.
I want to hear it. Go ahead. Tell him. Christmas Eve, he phones in one of those radio call-in shows and tells them, I need a new wife.
Oh, you're kidding. That's so sweet.
Now he's obsessed with this one woman who wrote me.
You serious?
Yeah, she wants to meet me at the top of the Empire State Building.
You want a hamburger without the meat.
That's what I said, ain't it?
I'll take a coffee, Black. What's the point?
I'm a vegetarian.
Who eats pork rinds? I mean, 1946.
Pork rinds are junk food. Don't count.
Baby got back. Baby got back. Yeah, baby.
To see a list of the clips used in our Sunday montage, you can go to OzarksAtLarge.com.
Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, February 2nd, Groundhog Day 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellen.
And joining us now is Becca Martin Brown, Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I was wondering if Christina knows who Muhammad Ali is.
I do.
Because she's the baby among us.
Right.
Yes, I do. He's a boxer.
Okay. Well, I'm figuring even little kids do.
Yes.
But they're going to find out things this coming week in Fort Smith that they might not know about African-American history.
Mm-hmm.
There's this really cool thing that's going to be at the Fort Smith Museum of History. It's called the American Legacy Know Your History Mobile Truck Museum.
Okay.
I'm intrigued.
And it's presented by American History Magazine, mm-hmm. which is a magazine about African-American art and culture. And they just decided randomly in 2008 they were going to buy an 18-wheeler.
I salute this kind of idea.
And turn it into a mobile history museum.
And it's a national thing.
Yes.
Okay.
And so it's been on tour ever since, and it's coming to Fort Smith Thursday and Friday, and it has all sorts of things crammed into it. Information about people like the first African-American jockey to win the Kentucky Derby. In fact, apparently the first 10 or 11 of the first 15 Kentucky Derby winners were ridden by African-American jockeys.
So back in the 19th century?
Yes.
Okay.
And Bessie Coleman, who was the first female pilot of African-American descent and the first person of African-American descent to hold a pilot's license.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And people like the Buffalo Soldiers mm-hmm. and the Tuskegee Airmen. You know, it's everything from they have Muhammad Ali's gloves.
Mm. His boxing gloves.
His boxing gloves.
Which is worth a visit on its own.
Yeah.
To they have original shackles that were used during slavery.
All in this one 18-wheeler.
Right.
Is this open to the public?
This is open to the public. It's sponsored in Fort Smith by the alumni chapter of Delta Sigma Sorority, which is a sorority generally for African-American women. It started at Howard University in 1913. And the whole idea was to explain to everybody that there's a lot of African-American history that African-American kids don't know, and you didn't get it in school. This is from 9 to 5 Thursday and Friday at the Fort Smith Museum of History, and you can find out more at 783-7841.
Perfect.
And also this afternoon, an ongoing Star Trek movie festival.
Where's this?
1:30 at Rogers Public Library. The perennial reminder of the Eagle Watch Tour.
Yes.
Coming at 3 o'clock at Rocky Branch Marina. You need to call 789-5000 for reservations. There's a Super Bowl party at the Springdale Fayetteville Elks Lodge.
Mm-hmm.
So if you need a little companionship for the Super Bowl,
right.
10 o'clock, $10 starting at 3 o'clock, and you get food.
Love game food.
And there's a Speak for Yourself, the Compassion Show.
Tonight.
7 o'clock tonight at Maxine's Tap Room. This, of course, involves Erica Wilhite and her theater troupe. And so it's always interesting. If you want to speak, you need to show up at 6:30 to sign up.
Very good. Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
The band The Sons of Otis Malone includes four musicians from Siloam Springs, none of whom are actually sons of someone named Otis Malone. Their new CD is Bad Country. Every Tuesday night, they play at 28 Springs in downtown Siloam Springs. This week, they were inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
We had a big time in Tulsa, waltzing at Cane's all night long. But I gotta get back to the mountains, 'cause darling, you know I done wrong. Oh, Rosalie's feeding the baby. She's hanging the clothes out to dry. She's got her radio preacher on, and I've got to get me gone, find some forgiveness tonight. I'm bound to chase after women. I drink my beer from a can. Rosalie's had all my children, and she don't need this kind of man. Got a radio preacher on, and I've got to get me gone. Find some forgiveness stupid and wild. Rosalie became a woman. Oh, and me, I just stay like a child. I was born in Texas, raised sinning for so long. I don't know if I'll find my way.
The song Rosalie, performed inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio by the Sons of Otis Malone, four guys from Siloam Springs. You can catch them every Tuesday night at 28 Springs in downtown Siloam. Their new CD, Bad Country.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fort Smith, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Bowles Gap.
Where is Bowles Gap?
Well, it's in Franklin County. Uh-huh. It's kind of at the four corners of four counties, though. Franklin, Crawford,
Madison.
Washington.
And Madison?
And Madison, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever heard of it, nor do I think I've ever been there.
I've never heard of it. We're taking a field trip.
Okay. Bowles Gap?
It's on Bowles Gap Road.
Well, that's easy. Attention, residents of Bowles Gap and residents along Bowles Gap Road, you will be seeing us soon.
Yes, you will.
If there's somebody there.
I hope so.
I do, too.
Or at least near there.
Yes. All right. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Our colleague Antoinette Grajeda will have a brand new Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon.
What are you doing for the Super Bowl?
Watching it. With some friends.
I'll be watching commercials and eating nachos.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll probably do both of those as well.
Okay. Well, no matter what you do, have a good Sunday. Thanks for listening.